You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Hey, Launch Streeters, Tamara here, your innovation host and a bit of an Amazon Prime addict these days, which actually gets into our podcast today. So we all talk about how Amazon has become this global force that is changing how we shop, from everything from books to now food, and how the devices in our house change how we even get everyday stuff done. So I wanted to dig a little deeper into the Amazonification of the world. So I brought in Penny Sanseri, CEO and founder of Author Marketing Experts and adjunct professor at NYU. She's also a best-selling author and internationally recognized book marketing and media relations expert. So she knows the industry that is impacting us all. We talk about Amazon actually from that high level industry, but also from the personal level about this Amazonification that is impacting us all, even how we do our jobs. We talk about how your perception of change is actually even more important than the change itself, and why having a figure it out mindset helps you manage change, and also why today's work environment demands an innovative mindset and entrepreneurial spirit. So if you don't have it, you better get on board with it. All right, let's do this. Penny, welcome to Launch Street. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be on.
Well, since this is your first time on, what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Well, I'm kind of a super geek. So when I was little, when I was younger, my dad used to, and this is, I blame my father for this. My father used to take me out into his workshop, and he would have me take apart a television set and then put it back together. And he said, because you need to know how stuff works. So I spent a lot of my childhood taking apart radios and TVs and, you know, that kind of thing, because he wanted me to know how stuff works. And so a geek was born, right? Yeah.
That's so cool. So are you one of those people then now that isn't afraid of technology and trying stuff out? You know, it's, I think for some people, things like computers or TVs or whatever, they're kind of like this black box and you're like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I am not afraid of technology. I'm actually, like, T-Mobile contacts me when I haven't bought the new iPhone, thinking that I've been hit by a truck or something.
They're like, come on, Penny.
Penny, the new iPhone's been out for a week and you haven't placed your order. What's wrong? Are you sick? What's wrong with you? So yeah, I love technology. I was one of the first people, I mean, you remember AOL, like, oh, 9 yeah. million years ago, right? I was in the first people going, oh, this internet thing is so cool. So And because of that, like 18 years ago when I started the business, we were one of the only companies that was doing online promotion. And I actually had an editor who shall remain nameless at a big publishing party in New York say to me, I don't really understand that internet thing. I don't know why you'd want to promote a book there.
Oh, my God.
Right? And part of me wants to email him and go, so how do you feel about that internet
right,
thing now?
Right.
Yeah. So
I think that's very cool. I, not maybe to that extent, but my dad used to force me into going to computer programming camp when I was a kid. Oh. And I can't program with Jack, but I'm not afraid of computers because of it. So I think there's something to be said about knowing how, like, what's behind the scenes and how stuff works. It just helps you later not be afraid of change, because you're like, oh, I'll figure this out. Like, I just need to figure this out.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
cool.
You have to figure it out. Yeah.
So I actually want to start with a journey, because you have 18 years of business underneath your belt. And, you know, so I guess my question for you to start off is, tell us a little bit about that journey, but also what have you learned through that journey, the successes, the failures?
Well, I'm sort of what you call an accidental entrepreneur. I never really planned to do this. In fact, I didn't plan at all. I dreamt about it. I thought, oh, this would be amazing if I could have my own business. And then I was laid off twice in 1 year. The first time when the CEO was let go and a bunch of us went with him. And then the second time, like 6 months later, a new job I started, they closed the company. So I was feeling kind of like a loser, not so, to not put too fine a point on it. And I started doing some consulting, some marketing consulting. And that's really how I started. I had no plan. I had nothing saved up. I just said, you know, I'm going to give this a shot. And literally, I became addicted to, oh my gosh, I can make a decision about something and implement it. And this internet, you know, Amazon was just starting up and independent publishing was just starting up. So there was so many things that kind of came together at the same time. And I think it goes back to sitting in my dad's workshop and just figuring stuff out. When you're forced kind of into that mindset, you do carry it with you into anything. I think one of the biggest things that I've learned is that when you are in business, you will hit a wall many, many times. The successful business person learns how to turn that wall into a window. Because you, and you know, for many people, and I know that the struggle is real and it's not always easy. When they hit a wall, they assume that that's the end of the road,
right?
For them, you know, but you have to learn how to turn that wall into a window.
So talk a little bit about how you did that. And I'm actually, I want to go back a step. I'm intrigued by this fact that you got laid off multiple times. So as horrible as that sounds, right? Look at you, huh? But I think that today's work environment is so much different than the ones that even our parents grew up in, or even the one I'd say even just one, I'm a Gen Xer, so one generation above me grew up in. It is, you've got to bring so much innovative entrepreneurial spirit and mindset to your work nowadays, because you are probably going to get laid off at some point. You're probably going to switch a lot of jobs. Like, it's just not what the stability used to be. So what did that experience teach you? And then this, I'm going to ask you both of these at once, because I think they're probably looped together. In terms of turning a wall into a window, can you give us an example of that so that we can really wrap our heads around what that means?
Sure, absolutely. So the day after I was laid off, I went to breakfast with a good friend of mine, and I was fully expecting, like, this breakfast was going to be my pity party and I was going to be allowed to just, you know, cry over my eggs and bacon. Yeah. And he looked at me and he said, "Penny, this is the most amazing news. Now you can do what you were always meant to do." And so I think that that was actually the first wall that I hit. And in the middle of feeling broke and scared and unable to really know where I was going and had no plan whatsoever, you opening a window sometimes happens like a piece at a time. So the first thing that you do is you put one foot in front of the other, or you send out that email, you start to research other ways that you can succeed. And over the years, you know, we had things like you know, programs that change, and there are 4,500 books published every day in this country.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So there are sometimes smaller walls, mini walls that kind of pop up where we're doing something and all of a sudden it stops working or it doesn't work. And so we have to change. And that's obviously not as disparaging as something where you invest in something big and the investment doesn't pay off and now you're out $30,000 or whatever. But in order to sort of get through that, well, you know, a year after I started the business, 9/11 hit, right? So we were just like, it was the momentum. I had the wind at my back and things were really kind of happening. And then it was all about duck and cover. Everybody was scared. And people, you know, books were moved off their publication dates. There were a number of fall releases that were, the publishers just didn't know what to do with them. So they were moved out in some cases a year, in some cases they were canceled entirely. And, you know, you really have to take a look at that and say, okay, am I going to let that defeat me? Or am I going to stand up and figure out how to sail this ship through this horrible thing that happened to our country, right? And people eventually, you know, obviously, because we came back, because we're Americans, it's what we do. We bounce back.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I think, not about 9/11, I think we all know what happened there, but and that was a major disruption in a lot of businesses, right? Business came to a screeching halt. for a lot of us in a lot of different ways. And, you know, I was having this conversation with a client of mine the other day, and he was saying, you know, Tamara, not about that event. He was saying in general, it feels like it used to be that you'd have this one major disruption, like something, some competitor, something would change the game, but it was kind of like an earthquake. You know, everything would shake, you'd wait for the dust to settle, you'd figure out the new norm, and then everybody move on. Where now it feels like it's a lot of these little micro disruptions, like things are just constantly changing, constantly in flux. You're constantly trying to figure out how to kind of out-innovate yourself. And I know that you're a book marketing expert and you've seen major disruption in publishing, but kind of with that frame in mind, I'd love to hear your perspective and talk a little bit about kind of how the publishing world has been disrupted and what innovative things you think actually came out of that, to your point about turning a wall into a window.
Well, the first major disruptor in publishing was independent publishing, right? At the time, now independent publishing is the new black and everybody's doing it and it's innovative and it's fun and it's a great way to get your book out there. Yeah. But 18 years ago, people still, you know, New York kind of looked down their noses at independent publishing, right?
Yeah, totally.
So that was the first disruptor. With that came print on demand. And print on demand, which is really sort of a form of printing, allowed people, individuals, authors, publishers, to print only a certain small number of books. And that helped this publishing industry grow even further, because if you can just print 5 books as opposed to 25,000, you can now get into publishing with a smaller amount of capital and a lot quicker, right? So that was a major, major disruptor. On the heels of that came Amazon. And nobody really paid attention to Amazon when it started out. It was just like, oh, well, this little company and, you know, and they're selling books or they're doing something. And if you go on, you can take a look at what Amazon's original website used to look like a million years ago. But it really did look like a big kind of nothing. And that was, I mean, Bezos, who's quite brilliant, you know, started in the book industry because it was the quickest point to entry for Amazon, right? So books was really how they built Amazon. And now, as it turns out, Amazon was the second and maybe even a bigger major disruptor of the publishing industry. Had Amazon not entered the picture, independent publishing could not have grown the way that it has.
Right, because it gave it a platform.
It gave it a platform. And it turned ebooks, which, you know, again, many in traditional publishing kind of laughed at ebooks, said, oh, nobody's going to want to read their book online, right? And Stephen King, I think it was maybe 13 or 14 years ago, released a book, an ebook, because he also saw the innovation behind it. And Amazon said, hey, we're going to put out a device and people are going to read on, and you can put 1,000 books on this device and, you know, paperless this and paperless that. And the next thing you know, boom, here's another major entry point for readers to get a hold of the latest book that they want.
So what do you do? Oh my gosh, I'm so jumbled because I have like 8 questions at once in my head, of course. but here's kind of my big broader question, because I think that's the journey you just took us through with publishing is the journey that a lot of industries are going through in their way. But it's that same kind of thing of like, first this happened and that this happened, then that happened. It's kind of this domino of change in their industries. What did you do to keep up with those changes and to recognize the opportunities behind them? Like, how did you figure that out as all of this is going on? Because I think there's a lot of launch readers out there in that position of, okay, the next domino is falling. What do I do?
Well, the first part of it is the research, right? The first part of it is research. The second part is always keeping your one ear to the railroad, as they say. That's an old saying, to know when the train's coming down the tracks, right?
Yeah.
And there's a great line in a movie that I loved a million years ago called Working Girl. And Melanie Griffith says, you know, you never know where the great ideas are going to come from. And what she meant was that she reads all of these different magazines because you never know where the great ideas are going to come from. So the first part of this is that if you're in an industry that is changing, which many of us are all the time, you have to keep your you have to keep your head in different areas, because again, you never know where these good ideas are going to come from. You never know what part of another industry is going to affect yours. And now more than ever, I think we're all very intertwined. The second thing, obviously, doing the research is also part of that, is knowing what else is out there. But the third piece of this, which is really the wall to the window analogy that I gave you earlier, is always look at how you can benefit from this, as opposed to looking at this change like, oh my gosh, this is awful. And I'll tell you, this is where a lot of traditional publishers lost a ton of ground with Amazon. Yeah. Because many of them lamented the fact that, oh, Amazon this, Amazon that. The way to turn that around is actually to look at the opportunity, because you aren't going to change this billion-dollar company that Amazon is, but you can look and try to harvest as much opportunity as you can. So does that make sense?
Yeah, I did. I love that you said that. One of the things that I, you know, firmly believe in is it's not that people fear change, it's that we fear being changed. But the problem is, I think we have a tendency to look at the change that's happening as something that we have to fight against. And, you know, hold our ground. I will tell you that I did a while back a innovation session for a newspaper association. And there were a couple people in the room who were on board with, hey, look at all these changes coming. This is great. How do we leverage this? How do we harness this into opportunity? But then there was a small group of them that just were digging their heels in the ground about, no. We just have to communicate our value. The printed paper will never go away. Everybody's going to still want the Sunday Times, you know, on their doorstep. This is, you know, we have to fight for the ground that we have. And sure enough, I think we all know where all of that is headed today. But I think that's to your point, is we can look at those changes and say, how do I fight against this and hold my ground? Or how can I benefit from this? Which is, I think, kind of how you just said it.
Absolutely. And that is where the music industry lost just so much ground.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, because they looked at Napster and they said, oh my gosh, this is awful. And there was a great quote from a big guy in the publishing industry who said, we should all be so lucky to get Napstered.
That's awesome.
because, you know, by definition, it means that our stuff is so amazing that people are really willing to share it like crazy through a system that everybody knew at the time was not legal, right?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, we all did it. I did it. We all did it.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, you know, that kind of reminds me of, have you ever seen the HBO show, The Defiant Ones, about Dr. Dre and Jimmy Levine? Have you seen it?
Yeah.
I think they are a brilliant example of what you're saying about how do I benefit from this? Because they had a music production company, which was, for all intents and purposes, on top of the world, but music was changing. Napster had come out. Like, all these things were happening. And those guys sat back and said, how do we benefit from this? And that's where the headphones came, Beats by Dre. So the opportunity there, if you switch your mindset and your frame of reference on it, is tremendous.
Yeah, it is tremendous. And almost anything that you go through in business, or anything that is, you know, sent your way, you have to look at it from the opportunity aspect, because otherwise there is stuff, and anybody who's been in business knows this, there's stuff that gets flung at you every day, certainly every week. And you can either let it drag you down, or you can look at it for the opportunity that it potentially is.
That's so true. It's your whole thing about wall to window. And for launch readers out there, I mean, I keep going back to that because I think it's so powerful. And I want you all out there listening, when you're not in your car or doing something else, to actually write that down and ask yourself that every time you're in a meeting and you hit a roadblock or an obstacle or an opportunity seems to be shifting, ask how you can turn it into a window, because I think that's hugely different. I want to understand just for a second before I dig into the next set of questions. When clients call you, so we've now got this new publishing world. We're all self-publishing. Mm-hmm. We're doing it on demand. We're co-branding our book covers. Like, there's so many things you can do. When they call you, what are they looking for, and how do you serve them in a way that matches the changing field that you're in?
Well, that's a great question. So, and I appreciate you restating it. So, when clients come to us, they come to us for they're in different places. So sometimes we have somebody who is CEO of a company and they're really trying to expand. and they want to use a book to be able to do that. And, but they don't have any idea about how, where they're going to have the time. And I'm not a publisher, I'm not an editor. So we don't necessarily publish or edit the books, but a lot of times I'll just spend a little bit of time with them, coaching them to try and show them where they could pull the content. Because most people who have been in business for a while probably have a lot of stuff, white papers or whatever, that can help them, can help to build the content to publish that book, to get themselves out there more or in a bigger or better way. If they already have a book, a lot of times I'm trying to figure out why they wrote it. What are their goals? Do they want it? Is the book really a business card, or is it something else? Do they want to do speaking? So there's a little bit of discovery that goes on, and everything that we do is custom to the needs of the book and the author, the goals, all of that. But first, the first part of this is kind of figuring out where, with what's your starting point, and can I help you get from where you are now to where you want to go? So that's the first piece of it.
So one of the things that you mentioned, just kind of in what you were just saying, is that this kind of indie publishing has helped so many entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs, those with their personal brand and something to say. And you kind of alluded to that when you're saying kind of, you know, how do we get this out to the world? How has that helped? And how should we, if I'm out there, I'm an entrepreneur and I'm thinking, oh, I've got some thought leadership, I want to get out there and I want to build my brand, how do I use indie publishing to make that happen?
Well, I mean, the first piece of this is that you could actually have a book out in 30 days, 60 days, or 90 days. I mean, you could do something very, very quickly. So there's a quick turnaround to it. The second piece is that I want people to stop thinking about a book as a 200 or 300 page thing, because short is the new long. And a lot of what we're seeing, and I've actually done this too, is we're seeing shorter books.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, with, you know, the quick time to market and the fact that you don't have to sit down and pen something that is 300 pages, what knowledge do you have that A, your consumer would benefit from, and B, that can help you bring in more people because you are now positioning yourself with this book through independent publishing to be a thought leader, to be an industry expert, because that's essentially what a book does. It makes you the expert. I mean, did that answer your question?
It totally does. And it just, it made me think, I was just having this debate with somebody the other day who felt like they needed to put everything that they knew into this book. So this book ended up being, you know, 600 pages. And I was feeling bad because I was saying to them, I was feeling bad about myself, actually, I'll just own it. I was saying to them in my, I do a lot of keynote speaking, and and my book sales have plummeted. And I'd asked people after, like, even in the best engagement, I'm not kidding you, I got a marriage proposal after one of these engagements, and I still didn't sell jack when it came to books. So I asked, I was like, you guys, like, what's the deal? Why, if you loved my content so much, why aren't you buying the books? And they said, well, I don't want to read a whole book. Like, I don't have time. I don't, you know. Yeah. And I was feeling bad, like, oh, my God, but I'm not that good. My books, you know, no, none of my books are selling at conferences. And this is a little bit old now, the book. But you kind of just nailed it about short is the new long. So can you talk a little bit about what's going on there? Because I think a lot of us in the business world are struggling with what to do with our books. And then ultimately, what our benchmarks of success should be. Should it be that we sold a million? Should it be that it got us into the door to a great client? Like, how do we think about it now and what do we do with it?
Well, so those are two really great questions. The first piece of this, so let me kind of take you, I think your example is perfect because I face the same issue. So I wrote a book called Red Hot Internet Publicity, which is really long and talks about everything internet and yada, yada, yada. And it's just, it's like, it was literally like birthing an elephant, like getting this book out the door, right?
Right? I couldn't leave one story out of my book, right? My first
book. Oh, yeah. I have to put everything but the kitchen sink. Every single story has to go in there. Here's the thing, though. When I published a book called 5-Minute Book Marketing for Authors, this book literally flies off the shelf. It's shorter, and the title itself tells people that they can do it in 5 minutes. So there's two wins, kind of, right? What I encourage people to do who are writing books is think about the top 5 questions that you get during the Q&A at the end of your talks, if you do talks, or questions that you get on your website or questions in social media. And that is what you should address. Everything else, leave it for your memoir or leave it for another book, because there's so much competition for information out there, right? And content is, we all know we have to produce content. We have to produce content. And to some degree, it's kind of mind numbing, right? So, but if you can really whittle down what your user needs in a very simple, and it doesn't have, and when I'm talking short, I've published books that are 72 pages that have been, you know, but they address one specific issue. So I have a book on Amazon marketing. The only thing I talk about in that book is Amazon marketing. That's it. Boom. If you want to learn about Facebook, I have another book for that. So essentially what I want to encourage business owners to do is address one major concern. And I'll tell you, frankly, and I'm in publishing, it took me a long time to learn this lesson, because I was just, here's everything you need to know. And
oh my gosh,
just look at that and go, I'm so overwhelmed. I just want to rock in a corner and cry. Right.
Yeah. how many books do you actually finish? Even the books that I love, I don't finish because I don't know. I get halfway through. I've learned enough. Like, I can't take anymore.
Oh, for sure.
So I move on.
Yeah. And here's the thing about that too, is the days of meandering first chapters are gone. Mm. So if I'm reading a book and the author starts to meander, I mean, if it has to do with the book, I think that's fine. But Twitter has really changed everything, right? So we are, you know, brevity is king. So starting, you know, if you really want to keep your reader engaged in your book, you got to hit him in chapter one with this, you know, with this information. And you know what I'm talking about meandering first chapters, where people kind of, you know, philosophize and they're talking about this and my experience here. And it's like, I think that's great, but maybe you could have had it as additional content in the back of the book so I can decide if I want to read about your experience or not. I'm here for the information. And for those of you writing nonfiction, that's the problem that a lot of people face.
Yeah, it's funny. I think the one thing I did right with my Think Sideways is the name of the book, is my other book, the one that's now clearly too long, is I put the about me. That's actually the last chapter, not the first, because I found that I don't care and I just want to get to the content that I want. So great that you have 30 pages of pontification about your childhood memory and whatnot. But can I get to that after when I have some time? Because right now I got to get to the good stuff.
Well, and you know, and I'll tell you something. First, you have to sell me on the fact that you know this information. And once I am your biggest fan, then I want to know all of this backstory about you. But you can't sell you first without selling your knowledge.
So what
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I want to dig into it a little bit, though, because I think that there's an implication for this across not just writing a book in whatever form it comes into, whether it's 72 pages or 172, but also in communication in general. You know, you got to get to the point, right? You got to get that buy-in and drop a value bomb right away so that people will stay with you. What advice do you have to frame that up so that we can start thinking about that? Because, like I said, I think that's actually across all our communication.
It is across all our communication. And, you know, in particular, we've seen a big, when we pitch media, we've never seen the news cycle like we have now. So that term value bomb is phenomenal. And that is exactly, you have to lead with the value. I used to teach this class called, it was an elevator pitch class, right? And it was all about teaching authors how to create their elevator pitch. The elevator pitch being 1 to 2 sentences, maybe 3, that you would lead with. And that is your entire book. And when I have this conversation with authors, I say, tell me in 2 sentences what your book's about. Most of the time they can't do that. The elevator pitch, in terms of leading with value, if you can define that down to 1 to 2 sentences and keep my attention, right, then that's your value proposition. That is the thing that your book circles around, if that makes sense. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, no, yeah. That totally does. That is really helpful. I was just thinking about, okay, how do I change my first chapter in my communication across the board, especially in the book I'm now writing, which I'm not going to think of as a book. You've changed my mind, Penny. I'm going to think of it as something else.
And you know, well, I mean, but your other, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you,
no,
but
no,
just, you know, like with your other book, if you feel like your other book is still long, why not chop it up into 2 books or 3 books and re-release it, you know, update it, cut some things, add some things, whatever, and release it. Because with independent publishing, you can do anything. You can rebrand and put out a book that you felt the first time was, I could have done a little bit better. I've done it.
Yeah. That's a great idea. I hadn't even thought about chopping it up, but why wouldn't I?
Yeah.
It's got chapters. Absolutely. So chop it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Put it in two parts or three parts or what, depending on how long it is. Yeah.
But I think what you said earlier too about, you know, you've got one book for this, Amazon, one book for something else. I think the power there is be clear and specific in solving that question that your audience has or that problem that your audience has. And you can't do that by writing 400 pages of an entire theory. You do that by being hyper-specific in what you're writing about. And when you do that, I would assume, right, your writing becomes clearer and shorter.
Absolutely. And you also need to understand that your audience, so I know that my audience, have they have day jobs or they have other commitments, they have families, they have whatever, they don't have the time to read 300 pages of my dissecting Amazon for them, right?
Yeah.
They want lots of screenshots. They really literally want me to be in their Kindle apps, walking them through, hand-holding them, walking them through this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it totally does. It's going to sound like a tangent, but I swear it loops back. I was frustrated the other night because I have my computer open. I've got my recipes and I keep having to scroll up and down between the recipe list and the directions. And I wish they were side by side. And yeah. I the way that relates to you, what you were saying is it reminded me of, I wish someone would think about how to partner with me in this experience I'm having. Versus like just giving me information. Because if they did that, they would recognize how I'm absorbing the information. And I think that's true for our books too, of can you build it in a way that allows them to use it in the moment versus, you know, finding the time to read, which I know sounds horrible because I love to read, but it doesn't work that way anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't work that way. And you know, what you addressed is actually, this is how Amazon got to be Amazon, is the only thing that they were concerned about was the consumer.
Yeah.
They live and die by making the consumer happy. And more of us should really, anything that we create, whether it's an app or we write a book or whatever, or like, I've had that same problem with recipes where I'm sitting here and I'm like, oh, I have to scroll. And then there's all these pictures and yada, yada, whatever.
And my hands are messy, right? I've got flour on my hands and I got to wash my hands.
Yeah, exactly. And it's completely annoying. And I have my iPad, you know, like up on a stand because I keep them all in Evernote or whatever. Right. And So if more of us looked at these projects, not as our projects, but as something that you are giving to the consumer and how can you give them a better experience, you know, anybody can be like Amazon. I mean, maybe not that big because you need quite a bit of capital. But I'm just saying, you know, that's how they got to where they are, is the consumer is their number one concern and it should be ours too.
I think that, though, is a really important message right there for launch readers to just kind of take a pause and realize when we're pushing our ideas and our thought leadership, our content, our expertise, whatever you want to call it, out into the world, we often think about it that way. How do I communicate what I know to the rest of the world? And Penny, what I hear you saying is, why don't we flip it and think about how is the customer on the other end absorbing it and what do they want out of it versus how do I communicate my brilliance? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's never about you. It's always about them, right? It's always about the audience. And writing a book is a very personal project. And it's something, you know, people say, I want to write, 83% of Americans want to write a book, right? So a lot of people want to do this, but many times we forget that the book is not about you. It's about your reader.
Yeah. It is funny how you're right, and I'm guilty of that too in my writing. You sometimes, whether it's a blog post or a full article or a book, we forget that it's really about the person who's absorbing it, not about us and our amazing brilliance, of course. Before I kind of dig into the last questions, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
So our website, and we have a ton of information on our blog, by the way, if anybody wants to check it out. Our website is amarketingexpert.com. That's amarketingexpertsingular.com. And listeners can email me at Penny, P-E-N-N-Y, at amarketingexpert.com. And I welcome any and all feedback.
So I wanted my two last questions. One is about Amazon and one is not. I wanted to ask you about Amazon because it's funny enough, it is the business that every business is talking about because they're encroaching on everybody's livelihood. I mean, they're going for global domination and they're doing a brilliant job of it. I think they're incredible to watch. What lessons have you learned, you know, when you think about what Amazon's doing that we should be thinking about, or what are they doing that we should be thinking about? Because I do think they are the, and not in a bad way, they're the 800-pound gorilla that's impacting all of us.
They are the 800-pound gorilla. And there's actually a really interesting article on Amazon about how their dominance over the industry, which is actually not it's not pretty. Like, not all of it is very pretty, but because they are in every industry. And I joke sometimes when I teach classes that I say, by this time next year, we'll be talking about the bank of Amazon, because how much longer, you know, they're in air travel, they're in healthcare, they're everywhere. Where, and you know, I come back to this. So you have to start with something small. You have to figure out, like, they started with authors. They started with books, right? They started with books and they focused on the consumer experience, knowing exactly what the customer wanted. They wanted the book quickly. They figured out very, very fast that we don't like to pay for shipping. So they figured out a way to get rid of shipping, right? Amazon Prime is a complete loss, money loss for Amazon, but it keeps people on the Amazon site. So I think that the third lesson is what kind of convenience can you offer to your consumer that maybe doesn't necessarily make you a lot of money, but keeps them thinking of you every time they need something, right? Every time they need what you have to offer, the first thing that comes to mind is, oh my gosh, I have to contact them. That company. So, you know, Amazon quickly realized that sometimes you have to give a lot to get a lot, to get even more. And that's where Amazon Prime comes in. And I think that the final piece of this, and I keep mentioning this over and over again, I know I'm sounding like a broken record, is it's not about you. It's really about, you know, it's about your consumer. I mean, we, you know, I would love, I'm not somebody who wakes up and says, oh, I love change. Change is really awesome. But we change our campaigns 5 or sometimes more times a year. And I do that because I want to keep offering the optimal experience to the author. I want authors to know that if they come to us, we're not going to sell them something that we sold them 3 years ago, because that was, you know, several million books ago and a lot has changed.
Yeah, you're changing with the times.
But I'll tell you something, creating new programs, because we create them and then we have to beta test them for a while. And then we test them again and we make sure that they work. That's a lot of work. And I would rather not do that. Like, if in a perfect world. But, you know, if I was somebody who didn't care about my consumer, I'd be like, you know, it's fine. It worked 8 years ago. I'm sure it'll work now. Sadly and surprisingly, a lot of companies actually operate that way.
Yeah. Well, their success is their biggest death. Actually, in a lot of ways.
Oh, for sure.
I think we see that all the time. And you know, you said something else in there about Amazon that I just want to highlight. When they started, they were hyper-niched. And they proved success and then got bigger and bigger. And whether their global domination was always their goal or not, right? They started niche. Facebook started with college students on campus. Uh-huh. So I think sometimes we forget that the biggest, most successful companies started very hyper-focused, figured it out, and then to your point, used the feedback and the experience to get better and bigger.
Absolutely. And you know, another good example of this is Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Yeah.
So we all know Chicken Soup for the Soul. It's almost this universal brand. But if you think about where Chicken Soup for the Soul started, right, they focused each book on a niche audience, right? Chicken Soup for the Horse Lover's Soul, or for the, you know, whatever. And it was all of these books that fed into a specific audience. And that is how they grew. That's one of the ways how they grew this brand to this enormous thing where people are now, you know, creating spinoffs of it and things like that. So the more that you can focus on, we all want big, everybody wants to the biggest company, the biggest, the best. But in order to get big, you have to focus on the small.
That is great advice. And with that, I'll ask for one more piece of advice as a closing thought that you have for launch readers out there looking to elevate their thought leadership through content.
This is another great thing because we blog 3 times a week. And part of it is the challenge of, oh, I have to come up with content. I have to come up with a blog. And this is a really great way. If launch readers are creating content, this is a great way to kind of brainstorm book ideas with your content, right? How how much can you take your content down as opposed to writing a big piece that addresses like 100 things that you want to tell your consumer? Can you take it down to one and expand that in big ways? And that's not, that sounds easy, but actually, because I've done it, I have to do the same thing. Like I want to talk about everything, right? Or if I'm trying to teach authors how to pitch media, it's like, okay, well, let's talk about radio, TV, and podcasting and blogs. And it's like, no. How about we just look at podcasts? How about we just focus on this one thing? Because the more that you can create that content that feeds into a singular need, people are going to keep coming back. So like if I write a blog post on how to pitch podcasts, and then I write one on how to pitch TV, you know that author is going to keep coming back to that blog as opposed to one long, meandering, overwhelming piece where they're like, oh my God, I can't believe I have to do all of this. Right? Yeah.
It goes back to being kind of hyper-focused and solving one problem at a time.
Solve one problem at a time. Yeah. Because we are in, you know, we're in a place where we have a lot of stuff coming at us. I mean, there are some staggering numbers out there. So you have to really focus on that one, what's the one biggest need? And if you do a lot of talks, sometimes the Q&A will help with that as well in terms of coming up with content ideas.
This has been so interesting, Penny. I can't believe we're out of time, but thank you so much for stopping by. I learned a lot about not just from the window to the wall to the window. There's a song that says from the window to the wall, so I almost flipped it almost. But I'm going that way, from the wall to the window, but also thinking about Amazon differently, because like I said, I think that's impacting all of us. And the third thing I'll add to that is, you know, I'm about to embark on my third piece of content. I'll just call it content. I don't want to call it a book anymore after this conversation. And you've helped me think differently about it. And I know you'll do that for launch readers out there. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thanks for inviting me to be on your show.
Before you go, what's the one thing that you learned today? I know that there are several, but I always like to focus in like, what's the one? What's the top thing? For me, it was this reminder about how our perception of change in many ways is more important than the change itself. And that's really the difference between those that have succeeded with this, you know, rise of Amazon and those that haven't, isn't it? It's those that saw the change as an opportunity versus those that didn't. So here's what I want you to do, innovator. I want you to think about all the change happening around you. Remember, big or small, we talked about those micro shifts as well as those big changes. And I want you to think about your perception of that change. Do you feel like it's happening to you? Do you feel like it exhausts you? Or is this something you could find a way to get energized by? Is that change actually an opportunity? Go think about that. Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.